All right, boys, how many of you in that car?
Oh, hi, three of us.
You ain't got nobody hiding in the trunk, do you?
No, no, sir.
All right, go on.
Hey, hello, everybody. Joseph Fotinos here. We are entering into a drive-in movie theater here at the Gentleman Nerds to do our special drive-in show. We're very excited. We just got past the main gate, and we are pulling up to a prime spot. Nicely done. I'm Joseph Fotinos. I'm here in the driver's seat. Over here to my right is Aaron De Oribe.
This speaker better work.
Let's hope. In the back seat, we have Mark Finn.
Hey, can you turn the air conditioner up, please?
Yes, sir. Oh, hold on, guys. And in the trunk, Mickey Finn.
Oh, thank you. I was getting stuffy back there.
Get in the car.
Hurry.
Okay. All right, guys. Wow, I'm so excited. This is our special drive-in tribute show. And boy, there are some wonderful drive-in memories. We're not going to really talk about the movies, although we'll mention them because they were in the background. But, oh, the glorious beauty of being at a drive-in movie theater. I tell you, folks, if you haven't experienced the drive-in, my heart bleeds for you. But those of you who have know what we're about to talk about. You'll know the joy that comes with sitting and watching movies under the big sky the way God intended. Oh, I think we're starting.
Settle back now, content, comfortable, well-fed, and ready for some fine entertainment. Is everybody happy? Then let's go. It's showtime!
I have not been to a drive-in since I was a kid, you know? I miss these. I really do.
This is my first time.
This is your first time? Well, that's why we put you in the trunk.
Yeah.
You have to have the full experience.
That's right,
Mickey.
That's right.
Mark, what was your drive-in growing up?
It was, I don't remember the name of it because I was a kid, but it was outside of Abilene. We only went to it a few times, then it was no more. But, you know, that was the time period when the drive-ins were sort of imploding. I remember seeing what was the Disney? It was Robin Hood. I saw Robin Hood at the drive-in. That was
the animated?
Yeah, the animated Robin Hood. Yeah. I remember that one distinctly. And there was another – it was a live-action Disney. I want to say it was the Apple Dumpling Gang. But I don't recall specifically. Of course, all those Don Knotts Disney live action movies kind of run together, anyways. But this was back at the time when everybody had Buicks, and you know everybody you know you had this one long seat in the front and one long seat in the back. The little tinny speakers on the outside. Of course, I was always a fan of anything that you could drive up to with a speaker and then have something delivered to you. Whether it was a movie or a hot dog, that was just the coolest thing ever.
That is pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Brownsville, Texas, and our theater, there was two drive-in theaters when I was growing up. One was the Charo Drive-In. Mm. And that's the one I think that we went to. I don't even remember. There was another one called Fiesta Drive-In, and I don't remember that one. Mm-hmm. But very similar fare is what we were treated to growing up. And when Mark mentioned some live-action Disney stuff, that's where we saw a whole bunch of the Herbie, the Love Bug. Mm-hmm. You know, my uncle, who would sneak us in. We were very young. I was probably around 7 or 8. My sister was a year older. And he would sneak us in to see movies that we probably shouldn't have been seeing at our age. Children Shouldn't Play with Dead
Yes.
Things. And a bunch of other sort of grindhouse horror that just scared the bejesus out of us.
Yeah.
And I want to say, when you're watching a movie in a theater, especially a packed theater, and there's people on either side of you, even in the dark theater, it's scary, it's atmospheric, you know, but there's still that level of, I'm in a theater with 150 other people, some right next to me, right at my elbow, and some behind me and some right in front of me. When you're in a horror movie in a car and it's dark and you can peek out the window and see empty dark space,
mm-hmm.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually scarier. Yeah. It is scarier.
No doubt. While we all have those drive-in memories, and believe me, The drive-in runs in my blood. I grew up at a drive-in theater. I do want to take a minute to step back in time, ladies and gentlemen, with me to Camden, New Jersey in 1939, where Richard Hollingshead Jr., a brilliant entrepreneur, thought, everyone likes their cars. Let's set this thing up. So Richard Hollingshead, good old Dickie Hollingshead, he was brilliant. He was the first creator of a drive-in movie theater in 1939 in Camden, New Jersey. However, the drive-in had the good sense to come to Texas to thrive. And I'm sorry, all you people listening across the country, Texas is the drive-in capital. It is the place for drive-in movies. Drive-in
this confuses me because it's so freaking hot here.
That's why, though. Because, see, the weather in Texas allows you to have outdoor movies almost 365 days a year. It doesn't really get that bad that you can't have a drive-in. And I tell you, honestly and truthfully, my friends, true believers, there were over 100 drive-ins in the state of Texas in its heyday.
Holy
at the same
cow.
Time. We were thick with drive-ins. We had a plethora of drive-ins. I grew up in Houston, Texas, and the drive-in of choice was the McClinton Triple Drive-In Theater. The Red Bluff Drive-In Theater was a Triple X Drive-In Theater, which, of course, had really high walls. Couldn't see anything in there. But the McClinton Triple Drive-In Theater is where most of my drive-in memories come from. It's where we saw Food of the Gods, The Phantom of the Paradise, Bug, Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, obviously in a re-release.
The Devil's Reign.
The Devil's Reign. The Warriors. So many different films. Aaron and I were talking before we started going to the drive-in here tonight, and we have the same kind of movie memories of going to the drive-in. He grew up in Brownsville. I grew up in Houston. And I believe that they probably had the same double bills rotating through the circuit.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we probably had a lot of the same drive-in movie experiences. Kingdom of the Spiders with Bill Shatner. I mean, these are drive-in movies that I recall vividly. I'll share one of my favorite drive-in movie memories. We went to the drive-in. My father took us all, my grandmother, my mother, my brother and I. We all went to the drive-in to see this animated movie. It was a cartoon, so yeah, it was going to be great. It was The Nine Lives of Fritz the Cat.
Oh, no.
Yes, yes. And my father, who just looked in the paper and saw it looked like a cartoon, decided we should all go. Now, this is my father. Instead of going, well, we can't watch this, he said, we're going to stay here. We're going to watch this.
Oh, my goodness.
So my grandmother's covering our eyes, and my mother's like, Spiros, what are we going to do? It's okay. You know, look back there. Look at the other screen behind us. Watch the other screen behind us. You know, my dad wanted to see the movie.
That's as bad as the story of my father taking me to see heavy metal.
Wow.
Right. And by the way, in Brownsville, we had the added bonus of we would get all of the quite wonderful, in my opinion, films from Mexico that starred Cantinflas. They were almost always, you know, these slapstick comedies. Mm-hmm. For those people who know who Cantinflas was, he was the Mexican comedian of the 50s and 60s. A brilliant, brilliant performer. And he's been compared to Red Skelton and to you know, it's that kind of body humor and wonderful, wonderful timing. So we would get to see a lot of those. There was another actor named Pedro Infante, and we would get to see a lot of his movies, and a lot of his were he usually was a charro or a cowboy of some sort. You know, saving the farm from the bandits and that sort of thing.
Right.
But yeah, so we got quite a wide variety of, and of course, spaghetti westerns.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I saw Fistful of Dollars. That's where I saw A Few Dollars More. Yeah. My Name is Nobody. You know, all those wonderful spaghetti westerns.
We had a lot of what we like to lovingly refer to as Southern sleaze movies that came to our drive-ins that we would see, usually as the bottom half of a double bill. By the way, folks, those of you who have never been to drive-ins, they were always two features.
Yeah.
Feature number one, and then intermission, feature number two, and then they would replay feature number one. So you could sit at that drive-in movie theater till, 2 o'clock in the morning before you had to light your car and drive away. But yeah, we would see things like Gator Bait, or the Women in Prison movies like The Big Dollhouse, Big Birdcage.
Spit on Your Grave.
I'm sure that played at a drive-in, but that was not one of my drive-in movie memories. I saw that at a hard top. And that's what the difference really, I think, when you think about drive-ins versus the hard tops, the Ozoners versus the hard tops, there was a freedom, that open-air freedom. Now, people would say to me, drive-ins, you can't see the feature, you can't hear, it's all crappy. Yes, I grant you, that is probably true. But yeah. That added to the charm of being at a drive-in,
yeah.
Sitting in your car. I remember we would go in our pajamas as kids.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, we would bring blankets and pillows, and then we were allowed to get out of the car, and we would lie on the hood. Mm. We would lie on the hood of the car with the pillow, looking up at the screen, and, of course, the adults could see above us, no problem. And invariably, by the time the second feature, the middle of the second feature came around, we were snoozing. We would remember is being, gently shaken and saying, wake up, we're leaving, it's time to go. And then we'd climb sleepily back into the car and off we would drive, it'd be dark. But I almost never saw the second half of the second feature.
And see, here's where it ties in. I've never been to a drive-in movie theater before, but... my wife and I, back when we were engaged, had our bed directly in front of a gigantic TV because we never entertained anybody. We had the TV in the bedroom. And we would lay there and do exactly that.
Yeah.
So it was like only, we had better sound. But
yeah. Right, exactly. But that is the experience.
Yeah. All you had to do was open up your windows and let the mosquitoes in, and you were good. But you guys remember pick coils?
Oh, yeah.
Pick coils.
They would sell them at the snack bar. They're little green curled mosquito coils that you would light the end of, and the smoke would come out and would keep the bugs away.
Oh, gosh, I think I do remember that.
The smell of the pig coils is very reminiscent to drive-ins whenever and they still sell them. And from time to time, my brother and I will watch movies outdoors. He's got an outdoor screen, and we'll light the pig coils because, it keeps the mosquitoes away. But number two, it also helps to create that drive-in ambiance. Also, the sound of walking on the gravel or the cars rolling over the gravel as you approach the perfect spot.
Right.
And, and I remember the speakers, but then very quickly afterward, they switched over to the radio broadcasts. It was...
We actually stopped going before would tune in your radio station. Ours was always that horrible tinny speaker that you would hang on your window.
The McClinton Triple was tinny speaker. My second drive-in of memory, I mentioned the McClinton Triple because that's where my most vivid drive-in memories come from. I'll share one of my favorites in a second. But then there's a second drive-in. Oh my gosh, the mecca of drive-in movie theaters in Houston, the I-45, a massive 10-screen drive-in. It was breathtaking. But that era of my drive-ins was my dating era. And so while I remember the drive-in, I remember the theater.
You don't remember any of the movies?
Yes. I don't remember a single movie. Well, I remember one movie that we saw at the drive-in, which was Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn. But I don't remember really anything else. I remember things at the drive-in, but not out at the screen. I remember other things of drive-ins, and that was the glory of them, really, because it was sort of a portable hotel room.
Oh, yeah. Well, in fact, my uncle would take us to these inappropriate drive-in movies, but what he would do a lot of times is he would have us, say, hey, you kids want to go lie on the hood of the car, and he'd be in the front seat with his girlfriend. So of course we're facing away from him. We have no idea what's happening behind us.
Yep.
And in fact, every now and then, if I start to sort of crane my head back, he'd say, "Hey, watch the movie." I turn and watch the movie.
I'm sitting here thinking, from Joseph talking about his brother having an outdoor theater and everything, and they get the ambiance. I'm now picturing, perfect Christmas present for them would be to get the little toy cars that kids sit in.
Yes.
And they sit in there. And, you can't recreate the second half of that in those little toy cars.
Yeah,
no,
not
the toy cars. Well, anyway. You don't have to get them the toy cars. You just need to get them a couple of hoods.
Right, right. Those little framework hoods that we can get into.
Yep.
But, they're wonderful memories. Okay, the McClinton Triple, back to that. The year was 1980. I was 11 years old. I recall sitting on the hood of the car with my cousin Conrad, wrapped up in blankets, and we were watching Friday the 13th.
Wow.
And there was Pamela Voorhees killing kids, slitting throats, hatcheting people in the face. We were mesmerized. We were glued. We were shivering and shaking. It wasn't cold, but we were shivering and shaking through that movie. And when Alice, the brave young counselor, beheads Pamela and the movie is over, we breathe a sigh of relief and we climb down off the hood of the car. It's daylight. She's in a canoe. Everything's fine. The cops are here. We're going to be just fine. We're like, whoa, that was scary. Yeah, I know. And when JV jumps out of that lake, I remember going numb. I remember the both of us were just like, ah! An incredible feeling. And outside, under the stars, watching Jason leap up out of that canoe to grab her, and the music and the sound, and I'll never forget that feeling. It terrified us.
And Joseph's life was changed forever.
So I have a story like that. We had gone to see The Food of the Gods.
Ooh.
And we're sitting there watching it. And, of course, you know, I have a thing about rats and just don't like them. And so, of course, giant rats are running around attacking everybody. And there was a stray dog that was wandering between the cars, eating food, grabbing whatever people would feed it out of the window. And so I'm lying there on the hood watching this, you know, going, this is really freaky. And you hear the dog's tail wags up against the side of the car. Boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, what the hell is that? So I'm not even brave enough to look over the side of the hood. I'm just looking, and I see the dog's furry back. I mean, something's moving out there. And I'm like, holy cow, what the hell? Somebody put a giant rat out here.
Around the vision.
So, yeah, I mean, again, what other experience that was not staged?
Yeah.
Could you could have something like that? It was amazing. It was amazing. And then the playground, there was always a playground. If kids got too rambunctious or it was a talkie part or they were bored or whatever, you'd go off and play with complete strangers at the playground.
Yeah.
And,
in the dark.
That made it better. It's in the dark with strangers and you're on swings and slides and monkey bars and... It was great.
That's what I remember from the Town and Country. That there was a playground there as well for the kids, which I thought was kind of interesting, because it was another way for basically the drive-in, as I understand it, is all about crowd control. It's resource management. You know, I want to take my best girl out on a date, but her two kids have to come along because they're 7 and 9 and we can't leave them alone. Hey, I've got an idea. Let's go to the drive-in. where we can either A, drug them with Benadryl until they fall asleep in the back seat, or send them to the playground with $3 each so that they can get food if they get hungry. And then we pick them up at the end of the double feature, assuming they're not already unconscious somewhere.
Right.
And I'm at least assured of one movie's worth of entertainment plus some heavy petting.
Right, right.
My friend, that is as good as it's going to get.
That's right. There was a lot of youthful plumbing of mysteries. I mean, that's where that happened.
Yeah.
You had the privacy of that moment.
In
quotes, because, of course, you're surrounded by people in cars, and ostensibly they're all looking at the screen, maybe.
Yeah.
But I remember being a kid back in the McLennan, and then looking at the back of the car. We'd look at the front of the car, but I'd turn around and look at the back and see what else is playing. And I sometimes would watch whole movies without sound from, on the other side. I'd see a different feature playing on the other side of the screen.
Sure.
And a lot of it, Coal Miner's Daughter or something like that was playing in the background. I remember seeing one time, or there was maybe that was at the I-45. My memories are blending together, but I do remember seeing the Warriors at the drive-in, literally watching the Warriors, and then the music when In the City comes on during the credits, getting out, walking into the concession stand, and it's playing. The music's playing. And that song, anytime it comes on the radio, Joe Walsh is In the City, I'm reminded of a drive-in. I'm reminded of the McLennan Triple.
Yeah.
There's that sound.
Yeah, and the concession stand. There was another good feature of that.
Oh, the concession
stand. Again, kids are getting restless. They're getting bored. Like Mark said, give them a fiver and send them on down to the concession stand.
That's right.
And you load up on sweet tarts and the full-sized pickles and the slushies.
Oh, it's like, getting us hungry here. It's almost time to make a trip.
Frito pie. The Frito pie.
Oh, God, the Frito pie. You know what?
Get a witness here for Frito
pie. I am sure that if I could smell the chili of that Frito pie now, it would sicken me like nothing on this earth. But back then, that was the best greasy smell that you could possibly imagine.
Listen, this is how I rationalize that. Okay, as adults, we know that the Totino's party pizza is not good pizza.
We've had better
pizza. We've had gourmet pizza. We've had brick oven pizza. If you've been to New York, you've had the mecca of pizza. You've had Chicago deep dish pizza, and there's better homemade pizzas. You could make a better pizza. But sometimes, sometimes you really want that taste
of
that all meat with the diced Canadian
cardboardy
bacon.
Oh, yeah. Yes. The
pockets of air and the thing.
Pepperoni that was so leathery that it was like cardboard. Yeah. Like, you would pull it out of your mouth going, is that an actual pepperoni?
But then actually pop it back in your mouth and finish eating it.
That's how I feel.
Even if it was cardboard.
That's how I feel about concession stand Frito pie. You know it's not good. You know,
you know
that cheese sauce on top has probably just enough milk fat in it to draw the hunting dogs and nothing. but the rest of it is all chemical. But that doesn't matter because it was $1.50 and you got it with a fork and
oh yeah,
it was essentially dinner.
And then you'd come back to the car, right? You'd be eating this stuff. Well, it's dark, so you can't see the horrible mess that you're making on your shirt, on your face, on your arms, on your seats, on your shorts. You can't see that. You don't care.
No,
of course, you get home and you're like, holy cow.
There was a drive-in commercial, come on commercial, that and we'll talk about that in just a second because it's almost intermission time. But and I remember this vividly. It started kind of scary. It was this Takata on Oregon, and it was dark, and these weird satanic faces like a cult came on the screen, and the camera was low and looking up like you were laying on an altar, and these guys were surrounding you, and they're looking down, and it's playing the really scary music, and you see in the blue light a hand come down and pick up a big knife, and the knife comes down, and then you see a hand come out, and it's digging through viscous, gooey something, and they're putting it in their mouths. And oh my God, these are cannibal Satanists, and they're eating someone. Oh my God, what is going on? And then the camera pans down to the quote unquote altar, and it's a crappy looking pizza.
Uh-huh.
And it says, "Everybody loves pizza. How would you like a hot, tempting pizza made fresh to your order?
Oh my God.
Well, all you have to do is come to the snack bar." And then it had this jaunty little tune, which if you'll give me a moment. "Oh, baby, we got popcorn, we got pizza, we got Pepsis and Coke. We got hot dogs, we got candy, and our food's no joke. We got hamburgers, we got shakes, we got fries and shakes. So come to the snack bar, come to the snack bar, come and feed your face."
I just
"During intermission, follow intuition, come to the snack bar."
Wow.
I disbelieve. Nowhere in Texas did a drive-thru mention Pepsi in their...
I'm telling you, man, it's like, Mickey, you should be lucky that you never... this is like a non-flashback right now. But, you know, all of it is... There is... I think today the closest you can get to a sort of a different experience like that, which have become very popular, are the Alamo style, you know, sit down, eat, you know, kind of. You have this big, spacious, wonderful chair. Often they recline, leather, and you have a full menu and a full bar.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of has become the new experience for going to see, you know, a movie.
And I love the Alamo because of the pre-show.
That's certainly the next iteration. But, you know, what's important to remember is that the drive-ins never died. And in fact, they've made a pretty substantial comeback.
They're making a comeback. Yeah. They're actually, it's wonderful.
There's a big one on the way to Dallas up from Houston.
Yes. And let's put that off to the side because we are going to go with the drive-ins never die after intermission because I think we both know, Mark Finn, where we're going to go with this.
Yeah.
It's very important. No talk about the drive-in would be complete without, take your hats off, folks, talking about that gentleman that we're about to talk about. So we're going to get there.
All right.
But I do want to direct our conversation back into our personal drive-in movie memories. Mark Finn, you had some great memories about watching some Kitty Fair, Disney stuff.
Unfortunately, I never got to watch any of the horror stuff, you know, or the real drive-in quality fare like Basket Case or Death Stalk or anything like that. The Town and Country closed, I think, in the late 70s or early 80s. And so I didn't really – and then shortly thereafter was when HBO hit – VHS came, and VHS is kind of where the drive-in style movies went in the absence of the drive-in. But it was the safe family-friendly stuff. And what's nice about that, that's what's – I got to tell you, not to get real for a second, but I don't have a lot of memories of my dad for the first 10 years of my life. But so the few memories that I have are us doing family stuff together. And you know, yeah, it's not an ideal way to see a movie, and if I was watching something now, I'd want a different experience. But there's something about being able to go to the drive-in and have control over your environment. You know, yeah. The speaker is yours. If you want to talk through it, you can. If you want to not talk through it, you can. You know, you can. But it's also being out, and I think there's something to be said for being out. You know, like when the drive-in, when the film would break, you know, and everybody would start honking the horns. You know?
Yes.
There, it's still a communal experience, and there is value in communal spaces, and they take on an aspect of the sacred when people come together for a common purpose. And I know it sounds like I'm probably overselling, like
no, not at all.
But it's true, you know. Yeah. We give a portion of ourselves to this shared experience and get back in a sort of a feedback loop greater significance than if we were watching it by ourselves. You know,
when, of course,
you know, you can hear other people in the cars laughing and screaming. Mm-hmm. You know, even with the windows up, you can hear. And so it's we can't understate the value and importance of connecting with our fellow movie fans.
Well, and not only that, I mean, you have the drive-in theater in Brownsville. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get a bunch of Mexican families that are all related, and they come up with a plan. So they would all drive to the drive-in. There'd be like 5-6 cars, and every car would be in charge of bringing some food item. Mm-hmm. Somebody would bring the soft drink. Somebody would bring the big bucket of chicken from a local favorite place called Mr. Q, or somebody would bring pizza or something. Mm-hmm. And you could see them running from car to car, like, oh, hey, you know, a beer. You know, okay, so they come in and they give you, mm-hmm. you know, people were just trading food and treats and candy. And, you know, this one cousin wanted to visit with another cousin, so they'd get out of the car and they'd run into the car next to them or the two cars down or whatever it is. So it became a sort of a family outing. It's like a big family picnic that you happen to be doing at night and watching a movie while you're doing
under the big Texas sky. And we could bring beer and we could smoke and we could sit outside on our little lawn chairs and watch the movie with the speaker right next to us.
Oh, yeah. Town and Country.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Town and Country actually had seats down front if you didn't want to be in the in the drive-in. You know, if you didn't.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
So that was a marvelous it was a very American thing, you know, quintessentially American, and maybe more so in Texas than any place else. But I love the fact that the drive-ins, that the digital technology has made drive-ins possible again, and now we're you know, now people have better stereo systems in their car than they do, you know, on their television.
Are you kidding? A movie would sound great in my car now today. Holy cow, with my bass booster.
Oh,
oh, my God.
But you mentioned the Alamo, but even the Alamo, while they do what they do inside in their little hard tops is great, even they recognize, and Tim League does this, he recognizes the importance of outdoor movies, so he's got the Rolling Road Show, where he'll show movies outside in various locations.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because he has an appreciation for the drive-in as well.
Including the Jaws pool party.
It's intermission time, guys.
Okay, here we go.
Show starts in 8 minutes.
Okay, we have 8 minutes. You guys, we're going to make a run to the concession stand. What do you want, Mark? You want a Frito pie?
No. I want...
come on!
Not anymore. That'll go through me like corn through a goose. I want a medium popcorn with extra butter, and
they don't have the real butter here like they do at your theater.
Oh, then I just want a medium popcorn, plain and dry, and a big soda.
We're gonna cover it with artificially buttered flavored.
No,
drink,
yeah,
because that's what we have here.
Whereas I want a pickle the size of a Yule log, and a slice of that absolutely delicious and an unidentifiable pizza.
Okay, you got it. Mickey, you want to come with?
Yeah, I'm coming with you.
Okay, we'll be back, guys.
Okay. All right.
Oh, my Lord.
I know.
No,
what are you going
to
do?
You know what? I want to have Elena experience that. I hope that there is or is not a drive-in in Austin. Do we know?
No, there's not one in Austin right now, but there are some in the Metroplex. I would be really surprised if there wasn't one in San Antonio.
Okay.
I'm willing to bet that if you did just a modicum of research, you would find something thereabouts, you know?
I think it's worth it. I still remember taking Elena to see Raiders of the Lost Ark when it came back to theaters, and it was in you know, 70mm or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I took her to see it, and she loved it. She loved it.
Oh, seeing it big is huge. Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. And so I would like to have her experience, although her taste in pizza is actually very refined, she would not touch anything from the concession stand, maybe the popcorn. I hope so. I know it's making a comeback. I didn't realize what Joseph had said that Texas was sort of the mecca of drive-in theaters.
There are more drive-in movie theaters during their apex. Okay, like you right. know, which is basically the late '60s to about the mid '80s. There were more drive-in movie theaters in the state of Texas than any other state in the country, and there were drive-in theaters in Texas when there weren't drive-in theaters in other places, you know, which is it was very interesting. There's a couple of history books on the drive-in and what they do. Actually, Frisco, Texas, the AMC. Oh, that's not a drive-in. Never mind, that's a different thing. I was looking to see if there was any if I could pull one up real quick, and I can't seem to find one. But
well, we're gonna go. Joseph's brother has an outdoor backyard setup, which has a screen, and they screen movies out there, and they grill and such. So I'm still waiting for Joseph to arrange one of those viewings, because I that's about as close as we're gonna get right now.
Yeah.
To that drive-in experience, and it would be a blast. It would be so much fun.
There is one in Fort Worth, an open drive-in called the Coyote Drive-In.
Okay.
There's one in Midland called the Big Sky. Shiner, Texas has the Crossroads Drive-In.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, Granbury has one. The Brazos is in Granbury, and that's an old one that they've refurbished.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we stopped. By the time I stopped going to drive-ins, they were pretty much showing all of the soft porno, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely just men going to see movies and things like that. We had stopped going to see. By then, we were almost exclusively watching movies in the theaters. And that's when theaters were getting, you know, the big multiplex, you know, theaters with like 5-8 screens. You know, before it was like one screen or maybe two screens if you were lucky.
Right.
But, you know, they started opening these big, big theaters. And so we just started. That's where we watched all the Star Wars movies. That's where we watched the Indiana Jones, the Raiders. That's what we did from then on. And we forgot about drive-ins. And actually, I think the Charo drive-in closed in the late 70s in Brownsville. It just wasn't that much of an interest. Well, I think the guys are coming back.
Hey, guys.
Oh, hey, thanks.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Holy
now, that's a pickle.
Yeah, that's
Jesus.
They have these pickles.
All right, let me stick this end out the window here.
Somewhere. All right.
Popcorn for you,
thank
sir.
Thank you, brother.
And drink.
Yep, thank you, brother.
Good stuff. Hey, they had some awesome posters in that concession stand.
And
it reminded me when I was a kid, I tell you, going to the concession stand, we used to stare at the movie posters, and some of them used to freak me out. I remember the poster for Mother's Day.
Yes.
I remember the poster for the Warriors creeped me out because of the baseball Furies. They just looked weird.
Yeah, the baseball guys were the scariest part of that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then Audrey Rose.
Audrey
Rose.
Yeah.
But it just my mind would just take off, and I'd be like, "What is this movie?" And watching it, and it just would give me the creeps. It was a great snack bar. They had a lot of stuff. They got hot dogs, popcorn, candy. Those pizzas, I hope you enjoy yours. I got myself a Frito pie because, you know, I couldn't help it.
They had churros.
They did.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they had churros. Hey, we were Mickey and I were talking about drive-ins that are around now, and you guys might not know this, but there are two drive-ins very somewhat close to Austin or Central Texas.
All right, lay it on me. I was just asking that.
Oh, the Stars and Stripes in New Braunfels.
Oh.
Brand new drive-in.
Nice.
Brand new. The New Braunfels is super close.
And it's gorgeous. Edward and I went out there, and it was just gorgeous.
Okay.
And then the Showboat drive-in in Hockley, Texas, just outside of Houston.
Okay. Good.
Both very nice, very new drive-in theaters.
Yeah, very cool.
Okay.
Very cool. The Graham's drive-in is still in operation, Graham, Texas, and there's a couple in the Metroplex that have gotten refurbished. Oh, and I found out that the Town and Country is open again. It got restored in 2000.
Oh,
so
wow.
I may have to this Christmas. I may have to take a little trip to the Town and Country. and go back down memory lane a little bit. That'd be great.
I'm telling you, if you guys plan, if one of you plan to go to one of these drive-ins, please CC the rest of us on a group message, because we need to make this an outing.
That would be fun. That'd be really cool.
That would be Aaron, fun. Stop waving the pickle around. You're getting too severe.
Man, are you kidding? I can barely move this thing.
That really stings.
I feel like you've gone in for limb replacement. That thing's the size of a baby's arm.
You are going to regret
that.
My friend.
You know, I could row to safety in a flash flood in this thing.
I have a drive-in memory of watching Harryhausen's The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. That wasn't obviously in its first release. It was obviously a double build feature that they put on the back of something else that I don't even remember. But the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad was the one that stuck with me. And I remember sitting on my mom's lap in the front seat, and she was bouncing me to the very jaunty Bernard Herrmann opening theme to the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. And that, when I hear that song, when I hear that music, when I watch it again, that's where my brain goes. I'm sitting on my mom's lap, and she's bouncing me to the dun, dun, dun.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, you just triggered something for me, because I remember I wanted to go see Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, and it was showing at the Town and Country, and they did not want to take me because my mother didn't want to watch it because she thought that that would be weird. And so I never got to see a Harryhausen film in the drive-in, but I was, you know, I was literally inches away from Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, which would have been awesome on the drive-in, you know.
Oh, God, yeah. Did you guys ever get – I may be confusing. There was another theater that was they refurbished it, but it was a theater that opened in the 40s under one name. It got refurbished, became the Majestic in Brownsville, and they used to show – every Saturday, they used to show matinees of the Toho Godzilla movies.
Ooh.
But I seem to remember seeing – Godzilla versus the Smog Monster
All right, then
that confirms it. Because that one I remember seeing, looking up, and we were outside.
Yep. The Smog Monster, you know what? In Megalon, Godzilla versus Megalon,
yes.
I saw that. I don't know if it was a double bill.
It must have been.
But I remember the two of them, because I remember seeing Jaguar get his ass handed to him.
It must have been.
By Gigan and Megalon, and thinking, where the hell are you, Godzilla?
Yeah.
Where the hell are you? And finally, Godzilla shows up and evens the tide, and they kick some monster butt. But boy, poor Jet Jaguar, he had to hold his own, and he was getting his ass handed to him by these guys.
And now I'm wishing I'd found one of these drive-ins when Pacific Rim was in the theaters.
Yeah, it would have been perfect.
Yeah.
It would have been perfect. Good stuff all around. I do remember, watching Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn. I remember telling that story from the I-45 drive-in theater. Yep. And this is, again, we're a little older. We're teenagers. We're in high school. But this was a group of us. It wasn't a date. My date was with me, but this is a bunch of us, right? We had a friend of ours. He reminded me of the comedian Sinbad. He kind of looked like Sinbad.
Right.
Sweetheart of a guy named Keith. Love you, Keith. And he's sitting there, and we had to drag him to this movie because he did not like horror movies at all. So we're watching this, and the sequence where Grandma in the cellar extends her neck and comes up through, and they stomp on the hood, the cellar door, and it squashes her, and her eyeball pops out, flies across the room, and goes right into that woman's mouth. I just remember Keith going, no, and he got out of the car, and he started walking to the concession stand, arms waving above his head, going, no. We had to run back and get him, and go, come on, no, I don't want to, come on back.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, it can't get any worse than this.
Right, exactly.
That was
kind of our argument, you know.
It's a done deal. We're going to make a plan, and we're going to go to one of these that are just recently reopened, because I want to see, like, I remember what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like now? What would that experience be like now?
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. So, Joseph, you mentioned that there was a certain somebody whose name would be...
Yes, indeed. All right.
Invoked.
Hats off, folks.
All right.
We're going to take you back to in the 1980s, the Dallas Times Herald, a writer by the name of John Bloom, who created a character that we all know as the very first and only drive-in movie theater critic from Grapevine, Texas, Joe Bob Briggs.
1982 was when he first made his appearance, and I got to tell you, he is one of my patron saints. He's one of my idols. He's one of the guys that is responsible for some of my conversational writing style. I adore. I would take a bullet for Joe Bob. Yes, in the chest.
Having never been to a drive-in,
any day,
I still adore that man, and he's the reason I know who Joe Lansdale is.
Yeah.
Because he said, go see Bubba Hotep.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
No, Joe Bob, man, that he is one of a kind. He was just such an amazing, because not only was he funny and definitely had the humor and the timing and the witty writing, but he was just a font of knowledge.
Yeah.
About
and
all of
these
topics.
He would go to these drive-ins in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and he would see these movies, and he would create these great moments in time, very much like what we're doing here, but talking about going to the drive-in with Cherry Dilday and watching these films like The Grim Reaper or Friday the 13th or some, you know, sexy teen comedies, and he would rate them with blood, breasts, and beasts.
Yeah.
He would, you know, how many heads would roll.
Car crashes, kung fu, these were the important things, you see.
That's right.
And to the best of my knowledge, he was the first journalist to do that.
Yes.
It's common now, but back then.
And he got banned.
Oh.
Eventually, people were very upset with him because he wrote a parody of We Are the World called We Are the Weird. He posted it as Joe Bob Briggs in the Dallas Slimes Herald, and the high sheriffs of the Dallas Slimes Herald thought that was too much, and they took his column away.
Aww.
But, of course, he went on, of course, to do the Joe Bob's Drive-In Theater on the Movie Channel. He started there and eventually got on TNT. Oh, there's so many nights I watched him on TNT.
That's where I remember seeing him. I remember seeing him on TNT.
Doing the drive-in totals and hosting the Monster Vision on TNT. What a great personality.
All right, so I must, this is the perfect moment. It's the only time I'll get to do this. I must do my brag.
Hmm.
He, back, I want to say 3-4 years ago, he announced that they were doing a script search. He was gonna produce, Joe Bob Briggs was gonna, his company was gonna produce between, I think it was like 3 and 5 low budget indie movies that would be right up the alley of horror or splatter, you know, punk, or just, you know, movies that kind of that he would talk about in his show all the time. And so a friend of mine alerted me to this and said, hey, you know, you're a screenwriter, right? You might be interested in this. So I said, oh, that's awesome. So I thought, yeah, why not? I saw the information, sent off the script, which was Hellhole, which Mickey's very familiar with that. And so I sent off Hellhole, and I said, you know what? They're probably going to get hundreds, I'll never hear from them. So turn the clock now, about 3 months later, I get an email. And it is the person who is coordinating this effort for Joe Bob Briggs. And my script, along with, I think, like, there was probably 8 to 10 others, had been selected as ones that they wanted to produce.
Wow.
And so I was like, what? Joe Bob Briggs, what? So I was incredibly, incredibly pleased and happy. But apparently, and I would check in every couple months or so. I wouldn't hear anything. And for whatever reason, it just didn't come together. I don't know if financing fell through or there were rights issues or what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, you know, they even said your script is higher budget than what we would be looking for. But you know, we like it. We like it so much that we want to find a way to do it.
Great.
And so I was like, oh my God. And you know what? So that would have been, if I had done nothing else, if Joe Bob Briggs had produced my script Hellhole, which was at the time co-written with my now departed dear friend Aaron Alston, who co-wrote that with me. And it would have been fantastic. Yeah. You know, I told Aaron about it, and he was delighted because he was a huge fan of Joe Bob Briggs.
Yeah.
So anyway, so there's my brag.
My own encounter with Joe Bob came when I started writing book reviews for him. As a television horror host, we were sort of drawn together online and met at book fairs and things like that. And he liked what I was doing because he was doing the same thing almost. But then he hired me to do book reviews for his website. And then shortly after that, when the Midnight Shadow Show, the horror show that I used to host, got picked up for national exposure, it was supposed to be on the Scream Channel, which Joe Bob Briggs and Hakeem Bangesh were co-producing. So I remember having conference calls with Joe Bob and with Hakeem talking about getting the Midnight Shadow Show on the air and this and that, and what they were offering, what they were doing, and contracts and deals. And then eventually Fangoria TV came a-knocking, and we went, we're going to go with Fangoria TV because it's the name recognition that we like.
Yeah.
And Joe Bob understood. He said, look, you know, if I were you, I'd be doing the same thing. I would go to Fangoria TV. But I would call Joe Bob from time to time. And I remember one time he was in New York. He was talking with me on the subway. Because I was asking him about the contract that I got from Fangoria and just getting some advice. And he was so kind. He was taking his time to give me, this local horror host, advice on a national exposure platform and saying, you know, be sure to ask for this, be sure to ask for that, don't let him do this, don't let him do that, because he had done it. He had been there.
Yeah.
You know, and I respected the guy so much. He's such a giving
He's a
person.
Mensch, man. He's a mensch.
Well, let me tell you my Joe Bob story. I have only spoken with him through email briefly. But one of the coolest things that he did back when it was when he was writing as John Bloom, he did an early article in Texas Monthly on Robert E. Howard. Mm. And in this article, he found out about Robert E. Howard's library being interred at the time at Howard Payne University in Brownwood, which is near Cross Plains. And so he wrote about that, had a list of books that was associated with it. And it was because of that early article that it prompted one of the other Howard guys, Rusty Burke, to start trying to figure out what books did Robert have in his collection, what did he read, what did he know. And so in a way, John Bloom sort of jump-started some Robert E. Howard scholarship kind of accidentally.
Nice, yeah.
And so at the time that Profoundly Disturbing had came out, I was needing some copies for giveaways, and I wrote to him in that capacity and said, I need some promotional material. And he was very kind and said, yeah, let me tell you who you hook up with and all that. And he's just been he's never not been a Texas guy, you know, he's just very much that person. I don't think fame ever went to his head.
Where was he born?
He's from he wasn't born in Texas. I think
he wasn't born.
He
in
got
Texas.
Here as fast as he could.
He could.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought so, because I remember somebody saying that he actually wasn't a Texan, which shocked me.
Right.
Because he seems so Texas.
Some of the best Texans aren't from here.
I'm from Texas. Yeah? My personal copy of Profoundly Disturbed that he gave me when he was here to do a lecture tour, we met, and he signed it, Professor Griffin, you are profoundly disturbed.
Sweet.
And because we just talked about Joe Bob Briggs and we honor him, I'd like you all to join me. Those of you listening, if you can, put your hand over your heart. Actually, if you're driving, don't do this. But
if you can stand up, you really should stand up.
You really should.
But not
stand
if you're
up.
Driving.
Not if you're driving.
We are going to recite the drive-in oath by Joe Bob Briggs. You guys repeat after me. We are drive-in mutants.
We are drive-in mutants.
We are not like other people.
We are not like other people.
We are sick.
We are sick.
Yeah. We believe in blood.
We believe in blood.
In breath.
In breath.
And in beast.
In beast.
We believe in Kung Fu City.
We believe in Kung Fu City.
If life had a vomit meter, we'd be off the scale.
Wow, I've never heard that.
As long as one single drive-in remains on the planet Earth, We will party like jungle animals. We will boogie till we puke. Heads will roll. And the drive-in will never die. Amen.
Yes,
indeed.
I had never heard that.
Let me tell you something, folks. I'm going to go ahead and throw a thing here. The Joe Bob Goes to the Drive-In and Joe Bob Goes Back to the Drive-In books are long out of print, but they do pop up online, and they're actually not expensive. I recommend unreservedly that you go pick these books up. It's essentially a collection of his columns peppered with some of the letters that actually came in to the newspaper whenever he would write something about how, you know, and I got to tell you, he had a kind of a Louis Grizzard was another one of these guys that would write about something with an imaginary cast of characters kind of around him, which would let him get to the topic at hand. Well, Joe Bob did this with his on-again-off-again girlfriends, Wanda Bodine and Sherry Dilday. Some of the guys that he ran with, and mm-hmm. and so he would. There would always be a lead-in to the drive-in review, mm-hmm. and that lead-in was sometimes better than the movie he was reviewing. There were several lists that he did that would break down the difference between barbecue and BBQ, for example.
BBQ, yes.
Barbecue, you know, is served at a table indoors. BBQ is always served on a bun, you know, and anybody who has the sign that says barbecue with the Q at the end is simply confused about what they're selling.
That's right. To this day, I'd say that, Mark, I actually say that places that have a sign that say BBQ, the letters BBQ, are much better than people that spell out the word barbecue or bar B with a letter at the end Q.
Right.
These guys, they slap up a BBQ sign because they're smoking all day. They're cooking. They ain't got time to worry about signage, for heaven's sake.
Right.
Just put a B and a B and a Q. We're good.
Yep. And so he, but periodically he would wander into, he'd call people from New York and New Jersey wimps because they would condemn basket case.
Yeah.
he felt that California was nothing but fruits and communists. But it was this persona, you understand? It was this ostensibly 20-year-old guy in a Coronado who would take his girlfriends to all the different drive-ins. There was the difference between a woman and a bimbo. You know, he had lists for all these, and it was always numero uno, and then mm-hmm. the second one was always numero two-o, numero three-o, you know.
And he had the annual Hubbies, the Hubcap Awards that he started, and he invited Stephen King to join him on the first presentation of the Hubbies. When he started issuing out awards to drive-in movies, to for the year's best drive-in movies.
But
here you go. No, folks. John Irving Bloom, born January 27th, 1953, in Dallas, Texas.
Yay!
I knew that man could not fake being Texan. Come on! I would have given him an Oscar.
That's good news. That's
okay.
Good news.
There we go. Now, he was raised in Little Rock, Arkansas,
uh-huh.
but he was born in Dallas, Texas.
That makes you feel better.
There's something wrong with going to a drive-through movie and looking up things on your phone.
Right. Well, and he's got a good signal.
Yeah. I do. That's great.
Wi-Fi here is awesome.
It is pretty good. But yeah, no. You mentioned Joe Lansdale. I wanted to quickly go down a brief rabbit hole and talk about his book, The Drive-In.
Yes.
Which I highly recommend to those of you who have not read it, Joe Lansdale's The Drive-In, which started as an article he wrote for Twilight Zone magazine called My Darkest Fantasy. And they had invited sci-fi writers and horror writers to contribute a small essay to the magazine talking about what your darkest fantasy would be. And Joe Lansdale contributed this, The Drive-In, which it started out as a short little essay, and then he expounded upon it and made it into a novel. But the premise of it is this. He and his buddy go to the drive-in, and somehow, in the middle of watching the movie, a bright green light streaks across the sky like a comet, sucks the stars away, and leaves them in utter blackness in the drive-in. It's like they've been pulled out of time and stuck into an interdimensional inky black universe where they cannot leave the drive-in. They're trapped in the drive-in. Now, the movies are still playing. And it's an all-night horror-thon, so Night of the Living Dead, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. These movies are still playing on the drive-in screen, but they can't leave, and they only have popcorn to eat. And eventually that runs out, so they start going a little bit more feral, and certain camps and groups start being formed. And there's a cannibal group that's a Texas Chainsaw church, and there's a Night of the Living Dead group over here that they're more, you know.
How long
does it take
for this? Because this sounds like this is all in one evening.
Yes, it starts out like a one evening, but then when you live in inky blackness, you have no concept of time.
Okay.
No, they don't know how long they're there. The novel goes further. Now, mind you, in the original essay, it ends at the end of the evening, then the drive-ins open again, and they can leave. But when they leave, there's T-Rexes and dinosaurs out there. It's just a weird – it was a nightmare he had, basically, being trapped in the drive-in. But it's a wonderfully imaginative story. And in the novel, he creates a character called the Popcorn King, which was an amalgamation of two of his friends that were manipulated into this weird dual creature that ruled the drive-in with a popcorn bucket on its head and four arms.
and the Popcorn King would broadcast over the speakers, and everyone in the car could hear the Popcorn King talking about, come eat my popcorn, join my cult kind of thing. It's a really fascinating book, and it's a lot of fun, and I'd love to see it realized in a film.
And for our listeners who don't know who Joe Lansdale is, he's one of the king of weird fiction,
yes.
along with yes. you know, Waldrop and several others.
Also a Texas writer.
Bubba Hotel was his story that got adapted. So
that's what I'm saying. You can't fake it. You sit down and you listen to Joe Lansdale, and he just has this way about him, this manner of speaking. It's not affected. It is absolutely 100% genuine.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing him talk for the first time, and the first thing I thought of was, like, if somebody would take everything that is Texan and distill it through this process into one form, it would be Joe Lansdale.
All the decent things. Let's leave the government out of it.
Yes. All the decent true. Things.
You have actually done. Eaten most of that pickle.
Yes. Well,
that is amazing.
It's going to be a cocoon. I've hollowed it out, and I'm ready to go in there and hibernate. And I'm going to pupate.
Unfortunately, soon he's going to turn into all piss and vinegar.
Mm. Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh, my God.
Like all good gentleman nerds do.
Oh, wow. We're trading seats. I'm sitting up front. You're going back in the trunk for that. That's horrible.
After he pupates, he's going to turn into a gentleman hipster.
Oh, God. Okay,
that's a beer.
Words.
And then we got to take him out.
Because we don't cater to that down here.
Yeah, that's right.
We do not. But, you know, the drive-ins and all their faded glory, because there was a time when the drive-ins did rule, but then it became one of those things that people just stopped going. I remember the I-45, the other memory I have of it, there was a McDonald's right next to the I-45, and I remember the line of cars that would go into the drive-in would go into the McDonald's drive-thru, out the McDonald's drive-thru, and into the drive-in.
Yeah.
And, well, while that sounds quaint and humorous, that was killing the drive-in because they weren't buying their concessions. Something that large, it's now a block of office buildings. The McClinton Triple now is an empty graveyard. It's still empty land, and if you walk through it, you can see a couple of posts sticking up out of the ground.
And hear
but that's
the haunted
about
melodies
it.
Of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the background.
Indeed. Indeed.
I mentioned it earlier, but the home video market was also one of the factors that killed the drive-in as well. Because you could, you know, stay home and mm-hmm. and even and really even you could watch the same really crappy movies, you know,
mm-hmm. Sure.
And you could do a double feature that way. And
but yeah, and also you're right, Mark. You mentioned HBO. That was right around the rise of HBO because I remember we got it. And so instead of piloting a car and going to see a movie at the drive-in. We would look at, hey, what's on HBO tonight?
There was also a sense of, I don't want to say danger, but drive-ins started having this unfortunate stigma where it wasn't really family-friendly entertainment anymore. It was more sleazier.
When they started showing the nudies and...
But then you'd have fights at the drive-in and somebody got assaulted at the drive-in and gangs started doing what they did. And
they were reenacting the Warriors.
They were doing very well. And I'm not saying every drive-in was like this. Most of them just died because the business dried up. They couldn't get anybody in there. They couldn't sustain it. Plus, the big, gigantic pieces of land that the drive-ins were sitting on were very valuable property.
Right.
And as the towns grew around them, because they were generally located kind of on the outskirts in the dark. They had to be.
Right.
The ambient city lights would kill a drive-in. The Astro drive-in in Dallas, I remember seeing that before it went away. We went out there, and it was unfortunate because the Dallas light, the sky... The light pollution was ruining our driving experience.
Oh, yeah.
It
no, they had
dark
to, in, I think it was either, I don't remember, it was the Fiesta or the Charro in Brownsville, mm-hmm. had to erect a wall because they were getting too much glare from, it was a Walmart or some big shopping center across the way. And it was blinding the people. So,
but you mentioned it really eloquently, Mark, as usual, but the drive-ins became almost like churches with the shared emotion of staring at that screen. And of course the various carnal interpretations of that love going on inside of cars. And then the innocence of the children on the hoods of the cars and the food and the smells and the sounds and the excitement and the disappointments. And I mean, just everything that was in that beautiful piece of land just built to a memory that I treasure and will treasure for the rest of my life, the fact that I grew up going to drive-in movie theaters and had that experience. It certainly was something that that I honestly, I mourn it, but I don't, because it's still there and you can experience it again.
That's right.
It really was like a lot of things like that, like a speakeasy or something. It was a moment. It was an encapsulation of a moment in time, where this sort of entertainment, this sort of interaction with family and friends, that defined it. You know, the drive-in defined a certain era. You know, I would say from the late 60s to about the late 70s. That was the era. And there's nothing like it. I mean, there really is nothing like it. Even if you bring back drive-ins, it's just you're nostalgically sort of reliving, like going to a speakeasy today. Well, yeah, of course, yeah. It's not like going to a speakeasy in the 20s, but I miss them. Miss them.
Well, gentlemen, I'm afraid that the second feature has ended. We should probably wrap this up.
Oh no! I just found a little snippet of Joe Bob online that I was going to read, but
go ahead. No, we have time for that.
I won't read the whole thing, but this is the this is more for our listeners than you guys. But this is this is the beginning of his review for Ice Pirates from 1994. Mm-hmm. I chose this because I wanted everybody to know. You know, he was very egalitarian with his reviews. It wasn't all just nudie flicks and Miles O'Keefe films. Okay, you know, he
covered space herpes.
He covered space herpes. Mm-hmm. So this is for Ice Pirates. Remember when the first Billy Jack came out? Remember what happened? Kablooey! Bombola City lasted 5 minutes. But then some jerk in Duluth, Minnesota, got some of his buddies together and watched it 17,000 times in a row to try to jack up the box office numbers, and it worked. Hippie kung fu. Couldn't get enough of it. Nobody even minded that Tom Laughlin's wife was as ugly as a piece of oatmeal cookie left up on the dashboard for 3 weeks. Everybody and his bird dog wanted to beat up some New Mexicans for peace. I have to admit, I got into it myself and twisted the arms of several New Mexicans over in Roswell. Of course, I didn't give a hang about peace. I just didn't like New Mexicans. Best things that happens, Chainsaw. Remember? About as popular as a fat kid doing can openers in the pool. Then some mass murder over in Tupelo starts watching it, and the entire state of New Jersey went to see it, and pretty soon Chainsaw Massacre was the best teenage cannibal flick in the history of barbecue. Listen up now, because I'm about to make a fairly heavy point. It took the drive-ins to make America sit up and say, Billy, who? It took the drive-ins to make America sit up and say, Chain, what? It took the drive-ins to make America sit up and say, what the hell's a drive-in? And it's happening again. It's happening right now. There's a flick in the drive-ins now to be made because it cost about 20 cents in the hard tops. Some of the perverts and the missing links in the audience already know what I'm talking about. I'm talking Ice Pirates. Now, before I go into this, I need to point out that I'm on triple extended probation because of some misunderstandings that happened the last 2 weeks, which I can't talk about, because if I do, my fellow Baptists will sue us for about $7 billion, and I wouldn't like it because the Baptists have already built enough giant Kleenex boxes with steeples, and I don't want to be financing any more of those. But I'll say this, because of some various kinds of communist pressure, the high sheriffs took a weed eater to my column last week again, which is why you probably couldn't figure out the part in the Hard Bodies review about my hard body. Some of the people just have filthy minds. I'm so disgusted I'm not even going to mention what the high sheriffs threatened to do to my gazebos if I try to sneak crotch shots on parade back into the newspaper. They think I made that up. They don't believe it's a gay musical comedy in New York City. I had to promise I wouldn't bring it up again. Crotch shots on parade, that is. And I probably won't. We're not even Ice Pirates yet, but that
that's Joe Bob.
That's Joe Bob.
I will skip down to where he gives us the deal here. At the end of every review, there's always a list of totals that for those of you that just want to skip to the good stuff, you can always go down to the end and get the bare bones, the meaty essentials. We're talking the most underrated and unappreciated outer space bestiality and mindless violence flick of the last 2 months. Four complete breasts and not quite a few see-throughs. 1 gallon of blood, 4 motor vehicle chases, human kung fu, robot foo, bimbo foo, 7 beasts, including drive-in Academy Award nominations for the Space Herpy and the Frog Lady, 14 dead bodies, 3 heads roll, eyes roll, 4 stars. Joe Bob says, check it out.
Check it out, folks.
Nice.
Yes, that encapsulates it very nicely. And my own personal copies of Joe Bob Goes to the Drive-In and Joe Bob Goes Back to the Drive-In, very dog-eared, very well-read, falling apart, still keep them together, still treasure them, almost like a Bible. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Gentleman Nerds are wrapping this up. We're going to head out of the drive-in here and back into our real world and humdrum existence of hard-top movies and odd home video. But it sure was fun revisiting the drive-in.
Yes.
For all of us here, the Gentleman Nerds, and of course, you guys at home, the drive-in will never die. Do enjoy it. Do try to find a local drive-in if you have one. If not, hell, just recreate one in the backyard. That's what we did.
Yep.
From the Gentleman Nerds, it's Mark Finn.
Make your own spaces and make your own memories, folks.
Amen. Mickey Finn.
I got a question for you. That one drive-in that is now an office complex?
Mm-hmm.
We really need to do a story combining Office Space and Poltergeist, because they built it on the graveyard of all
There's a story.
And everything. It just...
There's a story, Mickey, and I'm going to find it and send it to you, because that's exactly the plot of the story. It was called the night that... God, what was it called? The night the drive-in died, or the night of the last drive-in picture show. It was the name of this short story, and that's exactly what it was.
Awesome.
They closed this drive-in, and these developers came to build on it, and the spirits of the drive-in came up. We're talking aliens and monsters and creatures, and just basically all the emotion and bodily fluid spilt at that drive-in created this. Oh, I have to find it. Yes, it's a brilliant story, and it's grotesque as hell, but it what you just said.
All right.
It's exactly.
Okay,
right.
Now we need to turn into a script.
Now that we've dined at the Tangent Cafe, Mickey Finn, say your goodbye.
That was my goodbye.
Oh, okay.
Aaron, do you be there?
Yes, absolutely. You know, life is short enough, folks. Go out, live it to the fullest. What is it, the famous line that life is a smorgasbord and you know, too many suckers are starving to death?
So eat your pickles.
Eat your pickles. By the way, that story that you described, Joseph, there is a story like that in the Books of Blood.
That's the one.
That Clive Barker wrote. It's not a drive-in, though.
No,
it's a theater.
It's a theater.
It's a theater.
But the one I'm talking about was
and
a drive-in.
And all
yes.
the stuff starts
yes.
to
yes.
Bec-
yes.
it becomes
Same
a
kind
thing
of
that comes out.
Yes,
yeah.
But it was a drive-in. I remember it was a specific drive-in. I had to find that story. And I'm Joseph Otinos, letting you all know, of course, that the drive-in will never die, and heads will roll, and, of course, Red Skull Liz. Now, hang on. I got one more message from our drive-in gods.
Please remember to replace the speaker on the post when you leave the theater.
Gentleman Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustics Interactive. Promotional consideration by the Society to Canonize Joe Bob Briggs.
That was good.
Challenge to one of the all-female podcasts saying, okay, do a drive-in from your viewpoint.
Having to fend off a bunch of roaming hands. And,
yeah.
Yes.
And, yeah, I'm here to watch the movie.
Spilling chili dog grease and ketchup on your shirt.
We made it sound so attractive, didn't we?
Oh, God.
Get out of the car.
And what's funny is,
crime scene there.
Even as a kid, I would eat those goddamn Frito pies, and I'd go home, and I would feel so sick.
Oh, yeah.
But it didn't matter. I'd have the Frito pie again next time.
Frito pie was how much you ate. You just, you know, there's clearly a
Now, that's true.
You know, it's
that is true. Because that was a mixture of sweet tarts and Frito pie and pickle and popcorn and slushy.
Dots.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Dots. Which
Mickey,
I am sure never actually fully dissolve in your system.
No.